This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The African Union ambassador here, who is female, Dr. Arikana Chombori-Kwao, decided to invite and celebrate women's leadership, and so invited myself and President Ellen Sirleaf to share with our colleagues our experiences. In my particular case, they wanted me to discuss child marriage, economic empowerment, and women's leadership.
And that's former Malawian President Joyce Banda in Washington. We'll have details on that story coming up.
Also, the Zimbabwean Business Forum doubles its efforts to lure investors, and the International Displacement Monitoring Center says the crisis in the DRC has created the most refugees in the world over the past 6 months, and Uganda is struggling to scale down the high rate of teenage pregnancies, which is the highest in sub-Saharan Africa.
And we'll have these stories and more for you just ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, former Malawi President Joyce Banda says she and Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, along with other African women leaders, have opened the door for more African female leaders so wide that it cannot be shut. She says now is the time for her and other vanguard African women leaders to support more women leadership. Banda took office in 2012 as Malawi's first female president following the death of President Bingu Mutharika. She lost her re-election bid to current President Peter Mutharika in 2014 and has since been living in self-imposed exile. Her tenure as president was plagued by a $250 million corruption scandal. In an interview with VOA's James Butte, former President Banda, who is currently in Washington, D.C., along with Liberian President Sirleaf, thanked African men for working with women leaders, saying African women's understanding of feminism is not to antagonize men.
We were meeting at the African Union today. The African Union ambassador here, who is female, Dr. Arikana Chombori-Kwao, decided to invite and celebrate women's leadership, and so invited myself and President Ellen Sirleaf to share with our colleagues our experiences. In my particular case, they wanted me to discuss child marriage, economic empowerment, and women's leadership, and the stubborn link those three areas have.
Madam President, your election and the election of Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who you are with right now, created some expectation for African women in leadership. Do you think that expectation has been fulfilled, or do you think there's some damper that maybe Africans may not be as much interested in electing more women to power?
I truly believe that the world will look at the whole situation of women leaders across the globe. So I want you to start from Australia, look at what happened to Julia Gillard. Go to Thailand, see what happened to the Prime Minister there. Go to the Philippines, go to Myanmar, and go to Zimbabwe, go to Argentina, go to Brazil, go to Chile, and end up in America. So I think that issue is a long issue. We cannot discuss in a five-minute interview. But I think all in all, what we are saying as women leaders is that we have started and we cannot be discouraged. And it is our responsibility, those of us who have been in leadership, to get together and to rise and to support fellow women. But I would like to take this opportunity to thank African men, because we work together. Our understanding of feminism is not to antagonize our men or to be confrontational, but to engage them and to work together. And that is why, as African women, we are proud that we have done better than most continents. In other continents, they are still trying to get a woman into state house. In Africa, we have had four. We have had Catherine Panza in Central African Republic, apart from the two of us, and Mauritius now has a female president. Instead of dwelling on negatives, we need to focus on what has been possible. It was the first experience for Africa, but I believe that it is our duty also to support women, get them into leadership, bearing in mind women across the world are confronted with when they try to participate in leadership. And so therefore, we are not discouraged. We believe that we've tried our best. In my particular case, I want to take this opportunity to thank our men who have opened up space at the policy formulating table for women to participate.
That's former Malawi President Joyce Banda speaking with VOA's James Butte in Washington.
The South African-based Zimbabwe Business Forum has pledged its support to President Emmerson Mnangagwa's focus on reviving the economy. The organization, which aims to lure investors to Zimbabwe, says it has doubled efforts to recruit investors. However, as Tusa Komalo reports from Johannesburg, experts say more than talk is needed to gain business confidence.
Since taking office last month, Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa has put economic revival at the center of his administration. He has gone a step further to state his resolve to re-engage the international community that had long been disengaged by former President Robert Mugabe's regime. The South African-based Zimbabwean Business Forum says having a president with such passion for rebuilding the country's ailing economy is the best news Zimbabwe has had in almost four decades. Executive Chairman of the Forum, Marshall Sankara, says they are already hard at work convincing Zimbabwean business people outside the country and foreign investors to grab the economic opportunities in Zimbabwe. Sankara, who is also a businessman, says the Forum is convinced Zimbabwe is open for business.
We are very interested and we are going to do some massive investments in Zimbabwe. We are very confident that this regime, under the leadership of Comrade Mnangagwa, going to loosen investment policies, which were so choking off to investors.
Sankara's Forum seeks to lure $100 million worth of investment by the end of 2018. But senior researcher Samungele Hadebe of the Chris Hani Institute in Johannesburg says investors will first want to see practical guarantees that Zimbabwe is now a safe investment destination.
The problem that we've always had was that of policy inconsistency, issues of corruption, personalization of public institutions, issues of fiscal discipline. Those are practical things that cost no money, but that people would want to see very soon. Then we can realize a massive turnaround of the economy.
Many believe ending cash shortages should top the government's priorities list. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The captain of a fishing vessel was arrested in Italy yesterday after allegedly throwing one of his crew overboard in a bid to stop police finding the undocumented worker who could not swim. In a sting dubbed Operation Chains, police slapped Andrea Carotti, 46, in cuffs and accused him of illegally hiring a Senegalese worker and ruthlessly pushing him into the sea off Tuscany in June last year. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the incident, which highlights the plight of migrants who are seeking a better life in Europe.
Yes, this is a shocking case where police have arrested an Italian man, accusing him, first of all, of illegally hiring a Senegalese worker and ruthlessly pushing him into the sea off the coast of Tuscany in June last year. The Senegalese man, who didn't have legal papers apparently, was saved by a lifeguard who spotted him in the water, and he told his rescuer that the captain had pushed him into the sea because he was afraid of the Coast Guard carrying out checks. So this fishing vessel, this fisherman who's been accused, is accused of knocking him overboard despite knowing that he wasn't able to swim, according to police. So this is quite a shocking case. We don't know where the Senegalese man has gone. He was probably afraid of being arrested, and he had also been threatened, apparently, by Andrea Carotti, the man, the fisherman who was employing him illegally.
So he was rescued?
He was rescued, and the captain, incidentally, has also been accused of regularly exploiting undocumented workers on his fishing vessel, forcing them to work for around $12 a day. So that's really another indication of how many migrants are exploited in Italy and often paid terrible wages because they are undocumented workers.
And also it's such a risk anyway for migrants trying to reach Europe from North Africa and crossing the Mediterranean Sea. There's so many times the boats have capsized and they have drowned. So just not being able to swim, or even if you can swim sometimes, being dumped overboard, you could run the risk of drowning.
Yes, we've seen many, many cases of this in the last few years. And just this year, there are around 3,000 migrants who are dead or unaccounted for, according to the International Organization for Migration. We've had 165,000 arrivals in Europe, but still that terrible concern about those who've gone missing, often in capsized boats, leaving no trace, drowning very quickly, because too often sub-Saharan migrants just don't know how to swim at all. And this case of the fisherman is a terrible example, once again highlighting some of the challenges facing these migrants who come to Europe.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
The International Displacement Monitoring Center says the crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo has created the most refugees in the world over the past 6 months. The Norwegian Refugee Council responded to the report by calling the DRC situation a, quote, mega crisis. The council's DRC country director, Ulrika Blom, says communities are getting a double hit, increasing armed conflict and a political crisis over long-delayed elections. The Displacement Center's new report today says more than 1.7 million people in the DRC have fled their homes this year. The worst-hit areas are Kivu, Kasai and Tanganyika. What's more, the violence means farmers cannot get to their fields, so nearly 8 million people face food insecurity, up 30% from last year.
Uganda is struggling to scale down the high rate of teenage pregnancies, which is the highest in sub-Saharan Africa. According to the latest Uganda Demographic and Health Survey, 25% of adolescent girls between 15 and 19 years of age have begun having children. The trend is also blamed for the high maternal mortality rate in the country. VOA's Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
The government of Uganda and civil society organizations are alarmed at the high rate at which girls below the consent age of 18 years are becoming mothers. Teenage pregnancy rates are staggering in Uganda. According to the country's 2016 Demographic and Health Survey, nearly a quarter of girls aged 15 to 19 have had a baby or are pregnant before their 18th birthday. Many drop out of school, missing a chance to complete their education and become useful members of the community. Others have to put up with a lot of rejection. Chemtai Winnie from eastern Uganda had her first daughter at the age of 16. She tells her experience as a teenage mother.
I'm 23 years old now, and I have a daughter who is 7 years old. I got pregnant, and I was thrown out by my dad because he did not want to be with me. He felt so ashamed, and he started looking for me to kill me. And my mom sneaked me out of the home. I was so desperate. After giving birth, being in school was so challenging because at times you call home and they tell you the baby is sick. You are passing. You are in school and the whole school know that you have a kid. It is so challenging.
Chemtai is only one among hundreds of girls still coming to terms with teenage pregnancy. Vivian Chitio is a director at Wakisa Ministries, a crisis center for young women. She says her organization is overwhelmed by the number of girls struggling to cope with teenage pregnancies.
These girls are so traumatized once they realized they have missed their periods. And to make matters worse, they are sent away from home. They are totally rejected, dejected, not only by parents, but the man who makes them pregnant, and by the community, and by society. So the next thing is to commit suicide.
The majority of the teenage pregnancies come with various complications, most of which result in the death of mothers while giving birth. Sarah Opendi is Uganda's Minister of State for Health. She says teenage pregnancies are partly responsible for Uganda's high mortality rate.
Annually, we lose about 6,000 women, all dying as a result of pregnancy-related complications. And out of these 6,000, 1,440 teenagers. The teenage pregnancy results into complications into the lives of these young girls. They end up with other challenges like fistula. Some of them go in for the unsafe abortion and it claims their lives. Some of them, of course, get other deformities in the process. So this is something that we're now working towards to end in this country.
Opendi says the Ugandan government is fighting to reduce teenage pregnancies to at least 15%. In the next 5 years.
We hope to work closely with the cultural leaders, the cultural institutions, with the religious leaders, and we are going to engage the communities to end this. We want to appeal to the law enforcement agencies, the police, to please help us. Once there are cases of defilement reported, then they should be able to handle this matter in the courts of law. Let us stop negotiating cases of defilement, because early pregnancies is really defilement.
According to Uganda's laws, defilement is defined as performing a sexual act with anyone under 18 years of age. The maximum penalty is life imprisonment. Health officials say that education levels also have an effect on pregnancies in girls between 15 to 19 years of age. Statistics show that at least 3 of every 10 girls in this range who become pregnant have no formal education at all. Raymond Ruyoka is a capacity development specialist with Reproductive Health Uganda. He notes that the best way to eliminate teenage pregnancies is by educating girls and also teaching them about the use of contraceptives.
These young girls are getting pregnant, they are running out from school. So we are promoting information and access to reproductive services for young girls to stop them from getting pregnant. And also promoting condom use for the adolescents, so they can reduce on the incidence, and also promoting them to stay in school as girls, and also helping them to stay more, because once they stay long in school, they get empowered information.
Talking about sexual and reproductive health is not easy, especially in the conservative corners of Uganda. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick, and at 22 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The Zimbabwean Business Forum doubles its efforts to lure investors to that country, and the captain of a fishing vessel has been arrested in Italy after allegedly throwing one of his crew overboard to stop police finding the undocumented worker who could not swim. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. U.S. President Donald Trump is expected to announce today that the United States will recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and will move its embassy there. The plan breaks with longtime U.S. policy and potentially threatens regional stability. President Trump is expected to make the announcement in about 2 hours' time, despite warnings from Western and Arab allies. He will direct the State Department to begin looking for an embassy site in Jerusalem as part of what is expected to be a years-long process of relocating diplomatic operations from Tel Aviv. Jerusalem's status has been a stumbling block in decades of on-off Israeli-Palestinian peace efforts. Israel considers the city its eternal and indivisible capital and wants all embassies to be based there. But Palestinians want the capital of an independent Palestinian state to be in the east of Jerusalem. There's been widespread criticism of President Trump's plan. America's Middle East allies have warned of dangerous repercussions. Pope Francis has called for Jerusalem's status quo to be respected. China and Russia say they're worried the plan could aggravate regional hostilities. Meanwhile, protests have reportedly broken out in the Gaza Strip as Palestinian leaders call for 3 days of rage against President Trump's plan.
A study by the UN Refugee Agency finds what it calls shocking evidence of widespread sexual violence against Syrian men and boys inside Syria and in neighboring countries where they seek asylum. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva that nearly 200 refugees in Iraq, Lebanon, and Jordan were interviewed for this study late last year.
The study indicates violence against men and boys is far more widespread than previously believed. It finds gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex individuals are most vulnerable to sexual assault, with the victims ranging in age from 10 to 80. UN Refugee Agency spokesman Andriy Mahecich says sexual violence against men and boys inside Syria is practiced by all the combatant groups who use it as a weapon of war. He tells VOA one of the victims who gave evidence says he and about 80 other people were held in a tiny cell without any light for 30 days.
They were all stripped naked. During the night, they would be hung by their hands, and their captors would basically torture them with electricity that was applied to genitals and other parts of the body.
The study finds refugee boys in countries of asylum are sexually abused by other male refugees and from males in the local community. It says the high rates of child labor among Syrian refugee children puts young boys at particular risk. Mehecic says refugee boys and men working in the black market or informal economy are prone to sexual exploitation and blackmail.
We have heard evidence and interviews of refugee men and boys talking about the fact that they would not be able to receive their wages until they have performed certain sexual favors to their employers.
Mehecic says the incidence of sexual assault, rape, and violence against Syrian men and boys is vastly underreported because of the stigma attached. He says this cultural silence reinforces the myth that this problem is rare. He adds the UNHCR study shows the opposite to be true. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News. That's coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Sidrak Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
VOA. VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.